Nothing like a little family values to start off Jesus' public ministry, right? Here Jesus has appeared on the scene to be baptized, has called several of his disciples, and this is how he begins his work in Cana of Galilee, at a wedding, where there is apparently a lot of drinking. And then he tells his mother to essentially to mind her own business. We don't focus much on that family. See, this has to be one of the more shocking exchanges in our Gospels. Let's hear it again. Mary said, the mother of Jesus is never referred to by name in John's Gospel. Mary says, they have no wine. Jesus responds, woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come. Now, first we should know that scholars generally agree with Gail O'Day that though these words sound harsh to the modern ear, they are not rude nor hostile. Jesus' question isn't so much about rudeness as it is about distance. It's a statement of non-involvement, following a reference of non-relatedness. Basically, a whole lot of non. Because Jesus is removed, not willing to enter into this situation, one that is potentially a humiliating breach of hospitality for this family he supposedly cares for. But even if it isn't rude, the question still smarts. And for me this week, it has lingered. It's hung around the edges. It wouldn't leave me alone. What concern is that for you and for me? I suppose it was probably an interview with Assemblyman Tim Donnelly on what purports to be a Christian radio station that ended up being the straw that broke the camel's back this week. The California Assemblyman to the 33rd District, which is the high desert in Southern California, had this to say this past week on Wednesday. Guns are used an average of 3 million times a year, according to the Clinton Justice Department, he said on a show on the Christian radio station KBRITE, K-Bright. That's like 6,900 times a day. That's the high end of statistics, he said. Other people say it's only 200 times a day. Whatever that number is, they are used to defend human life, he said. They are used to defend our property and our families and our faith and our freedom. And they are absolutely essential to living the way God intended for us to live. Absolutely essential to living the way God intended for us to live. What concern is that to you and to me? We don't live in Newtown, Connecticut. Few of us live west of 580 in Oakland or in the Iron Triangle in Richmond. Many of us don't feel like we're at risk from gun violence most of our waking hours. Now, I know we come together this morning without being of one mind about this highly impassioned and charged topic. I know that there are some in this church who keep guns for self-defense, for hunting, and for the mastery of a skill. And I know that there are some in this church who believe that guns have little or no place in our society at all. So what concern is this for you or for me? Believe me, I struggled this week. long and hard about whether to address this at all. For I am not a constitutional scholar. I know enough about the Second Amendment to be a liability for any debate team. But friends, I do know what concerns me, what deeply concerns me. And that is the common life, the very soul of this country. For this reason, I would like to respond to Assemblyman Donnelly and say that no. If he is referring to the wide scale, the constant terror that is visited upon children, youth, adults, and elders in struggling communities around this country, many of these folks just simply caught in the crossfire, then no, this is not the way that God intended for us to live. If he is referring to his own school marshal plan that purports that the only way to provide security for our children while they attend school is to have a teacher keep a loaded gun in every classroom, then this is not the way God intended for us to live. If he is referring to the fact that anyone can purchase highly lethal guns at a gun show without a background check or a license or anything but cold, hard cash, this is not the way God intended us to live. Friends, the completely unrestricted access to weapons of unspeakable destruction is not the way God intended for us to live. When Jesus said, "Those who live by the sword die by the sword," it was not meant to be prescriptive, it was descriptive. It was a statement about the corrosive, retributive effects of violence. But what has changed since humans armed themselves with swords in the first century, or even when humans armed themselves with one-shot muskets in the late 18th century, is that we can now legally arm ourselves to fire dozens of bullets, bullets specifically designed to disintegrate into the body upon impact. We can fire magazines of 30 bullets in 12 to 15 seconds. Think about that. And often those who live by the sword don't just kill themselves. They often also kill innocents around them with or without meaning to. What concern is that to you and to me? It needs to be said that our concern cannot simply be about guns, because it is true that it is with guns that people kill people. Whether they do this out of jealousy or rage or fear or illness. And so our response to this sickness which pervades our society must be commensurate with the challenge of providing care for those who are mentally ill and unstable, like those who murdered at a nursing school just down the road in Oakland, California, or at a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, or at a Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, or at an elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut. Friends, that list that I just read, those were just some of the mass shootings in the year 2012 alone. And it does not come close to the day-in, day-out shootings that take place on the streets of our cities every week. Again, what concern is that to you and to me? Or perhaps you have read the stunning article from a few weeks ago by one of the Chronicle's movie critics, Mick LaSalle. LaSalle has been a critic for the Chronicle for many years, and as such, he's been asked to comment on many a movie that depicts violence as central to or often as gratuitous within the film. And by his own telling, he has been reluctant to speak his mind about what these films reflect about our culture. He has been concerned that others will question his place to comment on morality and decency. Because of this fear, he has remained silent. And so, of the many remarkable aspects of LaSalle's piece, I was particularly drawn by his proverbial come-to-Jesus moment, where he publicly proclaims that he will now call it like he sees it, spelling out the philosophical, and I would add theological, content of movies. And then he calls upon any and of all of us to insist that any movie with violence at all, any shooting, stabbing, bombing, or rape, gets an R rating. If this were enforced, this would ensure that films that show this kind of violence would be seen by adults, not by children or teenagers. And if that doesn't work, we should push for an NC-17 rating, he says. What was most startling, however, was his final thought when he wrote, "It's time to stop behaving as if we were paralyzed. It's time to lose our squeamishness about confronting screen violence and the monolith of profit behind it, and to start acting like a community." I was startled because, friends, this is plain gospel. This is one of the consistent themes of Jesus' ministry. Start acting like a community. And ironically, it's just what his mother is asking him to do in this passage from John. Now, the family that's hosting this wedding will be deeply dishonored, shown to be ill-prepared, unable to care for their guests when the wine gives out. And when he's confronted by Mary, Jesus is reluctant, not sure that his hour has come, that it is his time to reveal what God is doing in him. What follows with water and wine is meant to give not only a glimpse of what God intends for us, which is abundance, but also to show how we are intended to live as community, together. What is being revealed here is life as God would have it be. The good stuff, more than enough, known by joy, shared by all. In case you are wondering what concern this might be to you or to me, lest you believe that Jesus, that God is choosing to stay away from the pain and the suffering of this world, remember that it was Jesus who said that whenever we welcome the stranger or care for the sick or visit those in prison or clothe the naked or feed the hungry, in all of it we do this to Him. And it is the Apostle Paul who reminds us about the body of Christ, that no part of our body can say to another part, "I have no need of you." And it is Archbishop Desmond Tutu and many others in South Africa who remind us, when they offer us the gift of Ubuntu, that "I am because we are." In each understanding of how we are to live in this world around us, we are not absent, passive observers. We are deeply and irrevocably interconnected. As our brother Martin King so truly said in June of 1965, "All I'm saying is simply this, that all mankind is tied together, all life is interrelated, and we are caught all in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. John Donne caught it years ago and placed it in graphic terms. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. And then he goes on toward the end to say, any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. And by believing this, by living out this fact, we will be able to remain awake through a great revolution. I do not know what our remaining awake, what our action is going to be. Whether it will be with faiths united to prevent gun violence, or with the Lifelines to Healing campaign. But I recently came across the Episcopal Church's public policy site. You may not know that the Episcopal Church has an Office of Government Relations in Washington, D.C., but their role is to take the public policy statements that the Episcopal Church makes at our general conventions and work with leaders from across the country, political, religious, and other, to enact change. And to this end, they have recently started a campaign to break the cycle of violence. And as part of this campaign, they are asking people to take a pledge. And so this is the pledge that I took. As an Episcopalian committed in baptism to seeking justice and peace and promoting the dignity of every human being, I commit to being part of the solution to the violence in our culture that claimed the 26 lives of people at Sandy Hook Elementary School and that claims the lives of 2,000 innocent children through gun crimes each year. I commit to the pursuit of laws that keep guns out of the hands of criminals, prioritize the needs of at-risk children, provide care for mental illness, and address the many ways in which our culture both celebrates and trivializes violence. I commit to holding my lawmakers, my community, and my own household accountable. I commit to accomplishing these things in 2013. I commit to being the change we need. Friends, the hour has come. What concern is that to you and to me?